You're listening to What She Said, a podcast for bloggers and creatives hosted by me, Lucy Sharif, a freelance journalist living in London. Each week, I interview different women in blogging and the online world, getting their best blogging tips and advice, and a little bit of gossip too. Thanks for listening. Hello and welcome to What She Said. I'm so happy that you've joined me on this Monday morning to listen to my latest episode. This week I am super excited to share with you an interview that I did just before Christmas with Jen Carrington. If you are a regular listener or you read my blog or you just know me as a person, you'll know that I'm a huge fan of Jen. I did coaching with her back in 2016, and she is the one that kind of kick-started my career, turned things around for me. And I wrote a really popular blog post called Five Things That Helped Me Grow My Blog. And along with Sarah Tasker's Insta Retreat, hers is one of them, one of the reasons my blog kind of grew. And just my kind of creative career grew and blossomed. She's a creative coach, and she has a blog called jencarrington.com, which you may know her from, where she shares loads and loads of helpful tips on blogging and creativity and kind of business life. You might be subscribed to her weekly letters, where she shares just really beautiful letters each week with her subscribers. Or you might have listened to her podcast, Make It Happen, which is coming back for another season this year. But if you want to catch up with all of those, all the links are in the show notes. She's just a really awesome human being. She's wise beyond her years. She's a very quiet, calming female who is super feminist and just totally kick-ass. And I can't even tell you how giddy I was to be speaking to her because we hadn't actually spoken since my coaching, which was over a year before. And when I had one of my coaching calls with Jen, I had literally just taken a pregnancy test and found out that I was pregnant with Anais. So she has the crazy honour of, I don't know if it is honour, crazy fact that Jen Carrington was the first person who found out that I was pregnant before my husband, which is nuts. Anyway, I'm going to stop waffling. I apologise in advance for the excessive fangirling throughout this episode, but whatever. Fangirl and proud. Enjoy.
Hello, Lucy.
How are you?
I'm good. I am. It's cold.
Yeah, it's cold. It's really cold.
but I'm good.
I am going to be a little bit overexcited in this episode because Jen was my coach and she's one of my favourite human beings ever. And if you don't follow her, you should. But fangirling won't be over. I was about to say fangirling over, but it definitely won't be. So if for people that don't know who you are, do you want to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your blogging journey so far?
Of course. And if anyone heard that, my cat just screeched. So I have three animals and they're probably all making noises, so I apologize in advance. But yes, so I am Jen Carrington. I am a creative coach. What that basically means is I work with wonderful creative people who want to make things happen, whether that's take their business to the next level or write a book or create a podcast or just get out of their own way. I work with wonderful people like Lucy, which is, in my opinion, the coolest job in the world. I also write a lot. I have a blog. I have emails that I send out. I write little mini books. And what else? I have a podcast that has currently been very neglected this year, but will hopefully be coming back next year. And yeah, I mean, when I'm not working, I'm pretty much hanging out with my best friends, which are animals, or reading a book.
So I really want to talk to you a lot about coaching and kind of connecting with your dreamy clients. And I even said in a, I can't remember what podcast episode, in fact no, it's not out yet, I did an interview with Charlie Swift and I said something about dreamy clients and we were both like, that is such a Jen Carrington thing. You can tell I consume like all of your content. So one of the things that you talk about that's really, really helped me, aside from obviously working with you on a one-to-one basis, is honing in on like your dreamy clients and dreamy everything, but particularly when it comes to coaching. How do you do that?
Honing in on dreamy clients?
Yes.
I think you've got to be, okay, I think there's two layers here. I think the specifics of that one is you've got to be clear about who you actually want to work with. And I find that that kind of sentence of like holding on your dreamy clients, it really stresses people out for two reasons. Because they're like, well, what's a dreamy client? And then should I only work with dreamy clients? Because sometimes dreamy clients are just the clients who pay the bills. Like, that's also a dreamy client. It's like, there's different layers of dreamy clients, but I think it's ultimately it's everyone has like a zone of genius where they really excel. You know, we all have like a spectrum of things that we can do, but there's like a sweet spot that we do really well. And I think dream clients is where we really get to work within our sweet spot. And in our zone of genius, and where we get to work with people where it's just, we're in flow together, we connect. You know, dream clients are usually direct clients who share a similar worldview. They share a similar, they share a similar approach to the work. You're passionate usually about what they do. You connect well as humans, and you just have a very like high energy time working together. Yeah. I think sometimes honing in on that, I think it's easier once you've worked with a few clients and you can see, well, this feels good and this doesn't feel good.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm not really one of those people who believes in having like an ideal client like profile.
Yeah.
Because I just don't think you can box humans in like that. For example, like for me, some of my like dreamiest ever clients, I did not think they were going to be dream clients. I thought they'd just be like really good clients.
Yeah.
And they ended up being like incredible clients because we just made some weird magic happen together in the way we connected and the space we held together. So I think it's a very like nuanced gray area, which I'm sure is not helpful because it'd be nicer if this was like a summed up.
No, I think it's but better.
Sorry, what were you going to say?
No. I was just going to say, I think it's better because you're not, but you're right, because it can get really stressful when you're like, who's my ideal person, and where do they live, how do I find that exact person, and oh my god, there's only two of these people in the world, and how will I make money?
My advice for getting to the heart of dream clients is write a bucket list. So I mean, we're all like on the internet, so like think of people who you follow on Instagram, or you follow their blog, or you follow them on Twitter, and you just think, I'd love to work with this type of person. And it's not that, like, this really funny thing's happened to me. Whenever I write a dream client bucket list every year, and at least a third of that list has ended up hiring me.
Really?
Not from anything I've ever done. To like, it's just this weird, like,
putting the energy out there.
Yeah, or just like getting specific on who you want to work with. And I think the wonderful thing about social media is that you get to really know someone, and people share their struggles and their highs and their lows. So I think getting specific on who those people are, and it's not really about targeting them. It's more about, well, what is it about them that I would love to work with? And then the other layer is think about the clients you have worked with. What did you love? What felt less in alignment with you, with your core genius?
Yeah.
And every time you work with a client, reflect on it. What felt good? What didn't? Because also, human beings are messy. You're not ever going to get a human being who's like a perfect client. You may love one side of working with them and one side may be more challenging. And that's not really a bad thing, because challenges are good in a way. You learn from them and you grow from them. But I think kind of just getting specific on, who do I love working with? Who would I love to support? What would feel really like juicy for me to dive into?
Yeah.
And then from that, I think the secret weapon is then using that to create content where you're directly speaking to those people.
That was one of the tips that you gave me, which was super, super helpful. And for whatever reason, it took me, I suppose, actually, I know what reason it was. It was because I was pregnant and then I had a baby. It kind of took me a while to like click into that. But then once I had, creating content for like worthwhile content for kind of my dreamy people, but from a point of view of this is my expertise, that was a massive game changer for me. That's when I started attracting people that wanted to work with me, because I was being authentic and sharing stuff, worthwhile stuff.
Yeah, I think the trap we actually can all fall into is we write for our peers, not for our clients.
Yes.
So you write content that appeals to people who would never hire you, because it's more people who just maybe in a similar industry to you. And it's like, wait, if you want to have that type of content marketing where it's speaking to clients, you've got to actually ask yourself, is this actually speaking to the people that I want to work with and that I want to serve and that I want to connect with? Or is it kind of just noise?
Yeah, that's a really good point.
Yeah, and I think the layer there where people get stressed and lose themselves, and then they think, oh, I have to only share high value, actionable content. And sometimes writing to your dream clients is still like very personal sharing yourself style content.
Yeah.
I think it's just always knowing in your mind, this is who I'm writing for. This is who this is for. So you're being very intentional with the content you're putting out there.
What have been the biggest challenges in your sort of taking it back to your blog, actually, in growing your blog? And I'm not talking about like getting to certain numbers or anything like that, just even stumbling blocks where you felt like, oh, I can't press publish on this post, or because I get a lot of people, such a rambly question, I'm so sorry. I'm not back into the swing of interviewing people yet, so my questions are going to be about 25 minutes long. One of the things I hear a lot is people sort of saying, I don't feel good enough to write, or I don't have anything new to put out there, or but my blog doesn't look like everybody else's blog, or I don't fit into the formula, or I don't have a niche, or I don't have this, I don't have that. Have you ever had that struggle, and how did you overcome it?
I mean, every day. If you think about it, it's kind of weird. We're all just kind of like, I call them the conversations that I have with myself that I turn into content. And then we're kind of putting it out there, expecting people to care about it and read it. It's kind of weird. It's kind of crazy. It's like when you get down to it, you start asking yourself those questions of, am I worthy of taking up this space? Does anyone care?
Mm.
And then you just spiral into this place of like hating yourself and everything that you ever do. I think anyone
that feels familiar.
Yeah, and I think, and then you have days where you're so in flow. It's probably because it's a certain, for me, it's just I'm a certain stage of my cycle of the month, and I'm feeling really great. And you're in flow with it. I think something I like to always remind myself is, if I think of like 5 blog posts that month that I loved, or 5 podcast episodes or whatever, Instagram captions that really spoke to me. And if I think about what if that person didn't share that, because it wasn't entirely groundbreaking, it wasn't entirely new, because nothing is, but it was the way they said it, in the way they expressed themselves, connected with me, it brought me joy, it helped me feel less alone, it entertained me, whatever it did. What if they didn't? And what if I do? What if I don't? Then how can my work not connect in the way that I want it to? I think it's always remembering that, yes, it has all been said before, but it's a cliche, but it's not been said by you in this moment in the way you want to share it. And I think we kind of all feel like there's like a limit of how much space can be taken up around a certain subject, but it all matters. And I think it's kind of a big part of it is, I think, giving yourself permission to take up that space and to put your work out there, and to know that your story and your voice matters, for the sole reason that we're a human being and I think we're all inherently storytellers. I think we don't live just to experience life. We live to process it and talk about it and share and support each other.
I completely agree. Yes, so many yeses to that. So many, but you're so right. And we were kind of talking offline a little bit, catching up and stuff. And we were talking about, you know, because one of the Podmas episodes I recorded was about imitation and copying, and someone had said, can you record a Podmas episode on this, because it's quite interesting. And one of the previous, Sarah Ferguson, she talked about it as well, the line between imitation and copying, and it's really, really hard, isn't it? Because you're right, there's nothing necessarily new out there, but it's about you putting your spin on it. But it's so hard, even talking about imitation and copying and creating new things, or, you know, whatever. Like, I feel like it automatically makes people, like, even now as I'm talking about it, I'm like, everybody's thinking right now that I've copied someone, or do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah. And I think does that also come down to, as humans, do we have this natural urge just to pit each other against each other?
Yeah, that's true.
Because I think, you know, we all know it's the truth that there's no such thing as an original idea anymore. Like, all art is some form of like rework, imitation, like whatever it is. Like, we've all read Still Like an Artist. Like, everyone's got that book in their bookshelf. I think for me, the word that kind of defines how I always want to show up and how I always encourage my clients to show up is integrity. I think when you're doing things from a place of integrity, there is a level of peace that helps you keep going. I think you know, say you're saying something that's been said before, but you're saying it from your own stories, your own ideas, your own experience, your own brain. You can do that from a place of integrity. If you've got someone else's blog post opened up, and you're, that's not from a place of integrity. That's probably from a place of both fear and it's just a place of fear because you don't feel like what you have to say is good enough. So you're taking it from someone else. And I think that's the question to always have there is like, am I doing what I'm doing from a place of integrity? Can I be proud of this? Can I stand by this? Because what you have to say doesn't have to be groundbreaking or change the world, but I think it has to be true.
Yes.
In whatever that word means, it has to be true because there's too much bullshit in the world already. Let's not add to it.
And I think you wrote a blog post, or was it one of your weekly letters where you were talking about questions to ask yourself? I think it was before you kind of press publish. Anyway, it really rang true for me because just having that checklist in my mind, because I know that I've done it several times when I'm in a place of trying something new, I think is always quite a tough spot for me. When I'm trying something new, I am rarely confident enough to like go out there and be like, hey, this is my idea, it's brand new. Mm. Or not even it's brand new, but it's brand new for me. And that's when I find that I shrink a little bit and want to emulate somebody else.
Mm.
I don't know, like it's hard, isn't it? Because I feel like so many of us do that. But that post that you wrote, or the letter, or whatever it was, you gave some really good tips on questions to ask yourself to stop yourself from doing that.
Yeah, I remember it. I can literally picture it. So it's like, I think that the first question was like, is this true?
Yeah.
Like, is this coming from me? Is this rooted in what I want to share? And I think also, like, why am I sharing? I think we need to know always. Sorry, my dog is barking.
No, it's fine.
like, why am I sharing this? Because I think my personal rule, and I remember writing this, is like, this is my truth. So because this is my truth, and I'm not projecting it onto you, you have full permission to not agree with what I'm saying. But me personally, I don't want to write anything to validate myself. That's like a big boundary for me, is like, I want to share content to serve other people. I don't want to share content just to validate my life choices, because like, that's what my mum's for. That's what my husband's for. And so I think there's a layer of, is this true? Why am I sharing this? Like, what's my intention? And I think the biggest question I ask myself is like, am I at peace with this? Am I at peace with this, that so that I can share it and not have any, of course, anything people say back is going to make us feel bad or feel good, but is my healing process, is my experience as a human being safe from whatever comes back to me in that moment? But I think that question of, is this true and why am I sharing this? And just, I also think a big part of it is like building a relationship with your content. You know, when I'm working with clients and maybe they're new to creating content, it's very uncomfortable and they're very like out of their comfort zone. They're just like, how can I make this easier? And the only advice, the truest advice I can give is, it's a muscle. You will build it. It will be easier for you to come up with ideas. It'll be easier for you to write them. It'll be easier for you to share them the more you do it, because you haven't grown that muscle yet. And I think imitation comes from when you haven't built the muscle, but you want to still have the result of having the muscle. And I think sometimes we use it as a safety blanket. And I think sometimes we're imitating something and we don't even realize it.
Yeah.
And I always think like, what can we do to get to our very best work? And I think it's a mixture of getting through the first shitty draft and having actual space to be creative and being really quiet with ourselves and knowing, why the hell am I sitting down to write this? And with the validating self, like, I think people can think, well, is it okay not just to share for me? And I think, yeah, I mean, some of my favorite things to read are just like personal blogs.
Mm.
But I do think there's a difference between sharing something from a place of truth and sharing something and kind of manipulating it to make your life seem and look a certain way. And that's where I think the danger comes, because I think that damages your sense of self.
Yeah, yeah. And it's not even about making other people feel bad that you're putting out a false projection. Yeah, it's a false projection or whatever. But yeah, it can totally fuck you up.
What you're telling yourself in that moment is like, I'm not good enough.
Yeah.
Therefore, I must twist this to be good enough. And that just ties into everything that we struggle with so much in the social media world, of constantly feeling like we're not good enough or we should be a certain way by now.
I'm high-fiving a million angels as you speak. Something else that I really wanted to talk to you about, because I think you are amazing at this, is like boundary setting for yourself and therefore for everybody else around you. So as a former client, I felt like I had really clear boundaries, which may made me feel really, I think it made me feel really safe. But also you appear to set really quite strong boundaries for yourself as well, to protect yourself from things like burnout, which I know you've experienced in the past. Like, what are your best tips on that, and how do you do it?
I think the first question to always ask yourself is, like, what is feeling good and what isn't feeling good? Because usually that's from a lack of boundaries. So, for example, like, oh, it's not feeling good to reply to emails at 11 p.m. Boundaries. So I think the very hardest thing for people, especially when you're self-employed, is believing that you have permission to have boundaries.
Yeah.
Because we're in charge of everything. Like, if we want to pay the bills this month, we're in charge of it all. And so I think people believe that they're scared to have boundaries because what if the work falls through? Or what if I stop getting work? And all those kind of fears that come up. But I think the truth of it is, boundaries to me are golden, because boundaries help you be the best version of yourself in every area of your life. So I think the first layer is, because boundaries look different for everyone. So everyone has different needs. But I think the first thing is to actually ask yourself, like, what's not feeling good right now? Like, what is feeling like an energy drain for me? Is it that you're giving clients, is it that you don't have enough boundaries with your clients for them to know the scope of when you're available and when you're not available?
Yeah.
Is it that you don't have clear, like, email and social media boundaries? Is it that you don't have clear, just kind of like, boundaries in your day that you can have a non-working lunch or whatever you need, or that you don't check emails first thing in the morning? And kind of getting really quiet with yourself and being like, what is draining my energy? And also, the consequence of having bad boundaries are lacking boundaries is that things tend to fall through the cracks. Say, for example, you have no client boundaries and you've just got things coming at you from all areas, you're going to drop the ball because you're going to feel so overwhelmed and you're going to forget to reply to something, and then your clients don't get the best version of you. And then say in your life, say you've got absolutely no boundaries, maybe you get double booked one day with a friend in a work situation and you're going to let someone down. So I think boundaries are golden because they actually help you do better work and live a better creative life. But I think the first step is get really clear on what's draining your energy, get clear when you need boundaries, and then if it feels overwhelming to you to set them all at once, just try one boundary.
Yeah.
Just say, okay, I'm really fed up of checking my emails all day, so I'm gonna schedule in my phone 3 times a day when I'm gonna check my inbox, and until that alarm goes off on my phone, I can't check my inbox. And for everyone, that doesn't always work, because you may have, some people have more immediate emails that need replying to, depending on your business model and the work you do. But just try setting boundaries, and try, I think as a whole, boundaries are all a part of you being intentional with how you approach your working life. But I think I don't think we're raised in a world that encourages us to have boundaries. I think we're raised in a world that encourages us to, like, bleed ourselves dry for everybody else.
Totally. And especially as women, and particularly when you work from home or have basically, if you don't go into an office, I think boundaries can get really, really blurry. And if you're a brand new freelancer, if you're thinking of going freelance, then, oh my God, like, sitting down and thinking about your boundaries first can really protect you.
Yeah, and I also think, freelancers and people who are self-employed feel so much guilt for having more freedom when it comes to boundaries. So then they kind of make, I have so many clients who, when they first go freelance, are like, Jen, I sit at my desk from 8 till 8 because I feel like I should, but I'm not really getting any work done. I'm feeling really stressed. And I'm, because in reality, they could maybe get all their work done in 4 hours and then go and enjoy their day or do some creative projects, but they're scared to do it. Because, well, what will my friends say? What will my family say? Or just what will I say about myself? And I think as self-employed people, we have more freedom to have boundaries because there's no one ahead of us. We're the boss.
Yeah.
But we're scared to have them because we haven't been modeled to have this. But I truly believe that we can only really find fulfillment as creative people in these jobs that we've built for ourselves by giving ourselves space to define everything for ourselves. And to have the boundaries that we need to thrive. But it takes, I call it work week baggage, and we all have it. And I think it takes a lot of rewriting the stories and seeing and just trying things out, because sometimes it's really uncomfortable, but on the other side, you see that you're happier, more productive and more creative. So it's a journey. It's a very long, some people it's easier and some people that, I also think it's easier the sooner you went into being freelance.
Yeah.
I think if you worked somewhere for 20 years, you've got 20 years of work week back in.
Yeah, that's true.
I've worked for myself. I've had like retail jobs, and I have a social work degree, so I've had like social work placements. But that's it. I've been my own boss pretty much for most of adulthood. I don't have much work week baggage. I just have like school baggage and like I think that's what helped me set boundaries, because I'm naturally probably a little bit more anti-rules. And also I could build it. I think if you're listening and you've worked somewhere for 20 years, it is harder because you've lived a different type of routine. I mean, for you, what do you find hardest about boundaries?
Me personally.
Yeah.
I find with client work, I find sometimes I don't set boundaries properly for myself because I'm frightened that people will feel that they're not getting a good enough deal if they can't contact me. Like, if I'm not basically on call. And I think there's quite a lot of them, really. But, I mean, I remember touching base with you quite soon after, maybe it was after our last call, and I'd said to you, oh, no, it was after all our calls had finished. And I sent you an email, and I was like, oh, you know, I was getting a few speculative emails about coaching, and it was normally people asking for advice, and I would go back and give them loads and loads and loads of advice and da, 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 and then not tell them that I could offer them this as part of a package that they have to pay for. And I was like, oh, I feel frightened that if I don't give them all this free stuff, that they basically, if I don't do this, then they won't pay for me. And you pointed out, well, they're not clients. They're not ever going to be willing to pay for you if they want all this free advice. Or you said it in a much better way than that, but...
Yeah, I call, like, it's like hustling for our self-worth in all the wrong places.
Yeah, totally.
And it's so understandable because it is so scary, especially for someone like me, for you to take, you've built this experience and this knowledge base, and you're going to say, I'm going to translate this into a coaching offering. That's really scary because coaching is one of the least tangible offerings as a creative person. It's, you know, it's... And it's owning, you're owning that expertise, and it's really scary. And then people are coming to you, and because you naturally want to help people, it is so easy to fall into a trap of hustling for your self-worth. But all that happens on the other side of that is that you're empty and you're in the minuses because you've hustled and you've looked for it all in the wrong places. And I think you get tired, and then the clients who do love you and do want to work with you, you're empty for them too.
Yes. It's a really good way of looking at it as well, because until you'd pointed this out, really, I didn't, like, it was so simple, but I hadn't really... I almost felt a bit martyr-y. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. No, but I've been put on this earth to help people. I must help them. I must help them get this plugin working on WordPress. But really, I mean, Google can help them. I don't need to help everyone who asks me by giving them all of my information.
Yeah, and it's a... Oh, sorry, what were you going to say?
No, I was just agreeing, basically, and saying, yeah, I feel like a lot of people... feel that way as well, and you end up feeling just a bit resentful, I think.
And that's a horrible place to show up from, because I think then you feel guilty that you feel resentful, and that's where boundaries are amazing. So in terms of, you have your boundaries between this is what's free and this is what you pay for.
Yeah.
And you have that first boundary, then you have the boundary of clients and just the parameters. And like you were saying earlier on, it actually makes the client feel better, because if they know how things are working, they just feel safe. Yeah. They feel like you have a process, they feel like they can trust you. Clients need boundaries, and I also think if you have good boundaries, you're modeling to everyone else around you that they have permission to have boundaries too. I think also as a human being, we not only have to honor our own boundaries, we then also have a responsibility to honor other people's boundaries, even if it goes against what we want. Yeah. So say you have a friend who is like, listen, I'm really overwhelmed by emails and phones, so I'm not going to reply to texts between these hours of the day, and you're like, but I want to talk to you. You've got to honor their boundaries, just like you would want to honor that. If you say to them, listen, I can't do these certain evenings anymore to hang out because my daughter needs me or whatever. It's just, you have to honor your boundaries, but also a part of that is paying it forward and honoring other people's boundaries too.
That's a really good point. Everybody should take this this piece of advice, if they don't take anything else, just honor your own boundaries and other people's. So one of the other things that I think you're really awesome at is like having white space. And I suppose that ties into a little bit, ties into your kind of boundaries and how good you are at creating boundaries for yourself. But having creative white space, which I feel is a bit of a buzzword. I don't know if you feel like that, but I feel like I keep hearing people say that. Essentially, all it means is not doing other shit so that you can feel creative. And like setting aside a day to do creative stuff. And when we were working together, I think you really encouraged me to have like to have separate days for different facets of my business. And one of those days, and I still have them, they look a bit different than they did, but I still have that mindset of, okay, this day is my dreamy content creation day and I do whatever the hell I want, but this day is going to be podcast editing day, whatever. How do you do it? Tell us all of your secrets.
I think for me, I learned at some point that I don't function well with a jam-packed, overscheduled, stressful life. I crave so much space as a human being. I'm an introvert, like I'm an extreme introvert, so I wonder if that plays a big part of it for me. I'm also like, I pick up on a lot of emotions, like I kind of live my life with my heart on my sleeve, so like a lot of stimulation for me is very draining. And also as a coach, which is the work I'm so passionate about, it takes so much energy to coach every week. Mm. It's a wonderful transference of energy, but it takes a lot of energy, and I'm really committed to protecting that. So for me, white space is necessary for three areas of my life. It's necessary for me as a human. I mean, I live with chronic illness, I live with mental illness. It's very important for me to feel like the healthiest, most connected, peaceful version of myself, which is something I want to choose as a human being in the world. It's really important for me as a creative person to have space just to let the ideas like fester and ruminate and come to life, and just have space just to read and watch TV and just go for a walk. And then it's so important for me to be able to show up as the coach I want to be in the world too, and also just the human I want to be for my husband and my friends and my family and my dog and my cats. And so for me, white space is essential for me to live a good life and to live the kind of, be the kind of person in the world that I want to be. But I have had to build not only a business that allows me to have that, because I think it's very easy to build a business that fills up all your time.
Yeah.
And just hustle, hustle, hustle. Yeah. So I've had to build a business. And when I say I've had to build a business, I mean I've had to price myself in a certain way that allows me to do that. I've had to build my schedule in a certain way that allows me to do that. And then I've also had to give myself permission to do that, because the amount of time I live as much as I work, but that's not usually what's modeled to us, especially in the Western world, especially in like the UK and the Americas. I know in some European countries they've got a much better balance. But for us, it's kind of like you work 8-hour days, you know, 40-hour weeks. It's kind of what we're expected to do.
Yeah.
And so for me, I had to really explore what a different way of life for me, of how I could live my life and how can I treat rest and white space as high importance doing the work. But because it all fuels each other, that's how I do it. I feel no shame that like I will spend a whole day a week just like writing and listening to podcasts and reading and like napping if I want to. I'll spend more than one whole day a week doing that. Because then I also spend like 2 or 3 days a week just like diving deep into calls with clients. So it's, I think the biggest question is, what kind of life do you want? What kind of white space do you need? And then how can you build it for yourself? And it's easier said than done. I remember when I first realized this, my business wasn't built to give me this much white space. I was still doing like 5 days a week of coaching. And I just had to find like pockets of time and then know what I wanted and build towards that. So I think it's knowing what kind of white space you want. What are the stories you're telling yourself that are stopping you from giving yourself that? Because a lot of us have more freedom, especially when you're self-employed, than we think we do.
Yeah.
But we're wasting it by checking emails and checking social media and by just sitting there pretending that we're working because we feel like we should do, when in reality we could be doing something that fuels us and energizes us and makes us feel joy. I also think a little bit, I don't think we value personal fulfillment as much as we do as work productivity.
Yeah, that's so true. That is so true. And that starts from school, doesn't it, really?
Yeah.
Because nobody's asking you what you did each night, like how did you like make yourself happy like a few times a week. There's no white space built into your packed schedule at school to just sit and read.
Exactly. We're celebrated for homework scores and how much we did, and as creative people, our best work comes from, sometimes we get our very best ideas and in the shower,
yeah,
or when we're walking the dog, or after a really great conversation with someone. And I think creativity thrives in a different environment, then productivity also always thrives. It isn't about getting the most work done, it's sometimes about getting the best work done. And then when you are a human who also has client work and you've got creative projects of your own, you've got to find a balance that where you can enjoy and show up fully to them both, because your clients deserve the best version of you, but so does your creativity.
You're so wise. I just, sometimes when you've been chatting throughout this interview, I've been like, I need to ask another question, but I'm just literally listening to you. And like, yeah, as if this is, you know, a flipping free coaching call.
I think people always ask me, like, oh, how did you get to this place? You're so young, I'm 25. Like, how? And I think, honestly, like, and I know you can probably relate to this, like, I've lived with mental health issues for a long time, and I have chronic illness, and for me, and I've experienced things in my life that I've had to overcome, and I think for me, you kind of get to this point in life where you're like, it's hard out of our control anyway. I'm not going to make it harder on myself, and I want a good life. I want a life where I'm proud of the work I do and proud of how I show up to the people in my life, and I want to treat myself well.
Yeah.
And I think, what if everything we've been modeled is full of shit? Like, what if it's all, like, I naturally, like, my husband tells me that I hate organized anything and I hate authority, and so I'm probably more naturally wired that way.
Are you a Gretchen Rubis rebel?
I'm a questioner, which I thought I would be a rebel, but I'm a questioner. Rebel. Oh, that's interesting. So yeah, everything I do has to make sense to me.
Yeah. No, I can see that, actually. I can understand that. I know what you mean. Like, you won't necessarily follow the rules for the sake of following the rules. You need to know the reason why. I'm definitely a rebel in terms of it. But I think it sometimes comes from a place of insecurity. Like, I don't want to follow the rules. Just, I'm not following the rules because I'm so rebellious and contrary. But really, it's because I'm too scared to be part of it and to show up in, I don't know, and be judged almost.
Oh, that's interesting. Like, to be fully seen.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's easier to be on the sidelines. Sometimes it's easier to be on the sidelines looking in, judging it, than it is to... Totally. Be in there. Yeah, and that's just, we're all working through that shit every single day.
Yeah. It's hard though, isn't it? It's hard. Especially when you're like, you know, we're all, people listening to the podcast, most of us are all, you know, online beings. And it's really easy to put ourselves out there online and be vulnerable and all the rest of it and see other people being vulnerable. And it's, you end up in this terrible greenhouse of navel gazing and.
And that's where I think, like, expanding what you consume, like, for me, the things that bring me the most joy and the things that I think fuel my creativity the most is, like, any form of literature, films, but most of all, like, I love watching, like, round table conversations with, like, writers or, like, directors or, like, actresses.
Do you?
Like, that fuels me so much.
Like, what's that thing called, in the actor's studio or in the...
Oh yeah, I like actors and actresses, I like the Hollywood Reporter, like, I'm obsessed with those stuff. And but literature for me is like just like diving into a book, like, because I feel like Instagram and like our community, it's fantastic, but it is an echo chamber.
Yeah,
it's the same thing. It's just everyone's doing their own version of it. But I think for me, it's, I get way more depth when I take myself out of it and I do the things that just brought me joy before I joined the internet world.
Yeah, remember those days. I think you're amazing at recommending books. So quite a lot of the books that I've read, you were recommended to me by you, either through our coaching, but also you share quite a lot in your letters and in your podcast. I think you've talked about different books and stuff. Obviously, I'm sure everybody's read Big Magic, but but also you recommended Becoming to me ages ago.
By Laura J. Williams.
Laura J. Williams, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, it's beautiful, isn't it?
It's so, 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 so good. I actually didn't read it. I listened to the audiobook.
Does she read it on Audible?
She reads it, yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's really awesome. I haven't read Ice Cream for Breakfast, but I really want to. I think it'd be really interesting.
Yeah, I read it on a plane too. I think I read it on the plane when we went to get married, and it was... Oh. It was wonderful. I read it on a plane. I can't remember. It's like, I only read half of it. And you know, sometimes you read half a book on a plane or like, and then you put it on your shelf and then you need to come back to it. But yeah, she's fantastic.
Yeah, she's amazing. What are some other books that you would recommend?
The book I recommend to every human is Tiny Beautiful Things by Cheryl Strayed. I think she's a writer. She's a creative human. She's lived a lot of life. And I think it's a collection of her like advice columns. Honestly, I read the book every year. This year I got the audiobook with what she reads out and I listened to it.
I love her voice.
Yeah, I would really recommend getting the audiobook. Okay. It's a really nice, like, when I do my makeup in the morning, when I bother to put makeup on, I like listen to it. It just, it makes you be like the bravest, most like badass version of yourself, because she, the book I wrote, The Nobody's Gonna Do Your Life or Your Business for You, that I wrote recently, that was kind of inspired by a quote from her, which is like, no one's gonna do your life for you, go do it for yourself. And I think her book always reminds me to be like the kindest, bravest version of myself. And also she just dives into like so many like things like grief and loss, and it's beautiful. And then I think Essentialism is a book I really love, which is all about kind of, it's like doing what's most essential in your life and not being distracted by the things that don't really matter. Mm-hmm. Anything by Brené Brown,
yes. I think
is golden. Gretchen Rubin's books, you've got The Four Tendencies and Better Than Before, which is about habits. I think that's really helpful if people want to understand what motivates them to do things. I think there's a book coming out next year that I'm very excited to read, which is by one of my favorite humans on the internet called Alexandra Franzen. She's got a book coming out called You're Going to Survive, and it's like a collection of stories of people who face like rejection or criticism or failure and how they survived it, which I think is going to be so powerful for people.
Mm, interesting.
But I would honestly say also, for me, like reading fiction helps me the most, because it helps me just analyze what it means to be a human in the world. And then also like, and then angry feminist books, as my husband likes to call it. It's like my favorite thing. Like The Hate Spot by Jill Filipovic. Have you read it?
No.
Oh, it's fantastic. It's like it's called like The Feminist Pursuit of Happiness, and it was an incredible read. Like that was one of my favorites of this year. But anything usually by Cheryl Strayed, Brené Brown, those are like my go-to books.
Yeah.
And then fiction, just like feminist fiction is probably like what my husband calls my angry feminist books.
Your angry feminist books, I love that. Somebody posted something about the why I'm not talking to white people about racism. Have you heard of that book?
Yeah, it's on my Amazon. Yeah. It's my next Amazon book order.
It looks really, really good. It was Sass Petherick, actually. She put it on her Instagram stories. And she said, uncomfortable but necessary read.
Yeah, and those are sometimes the most important, like books that make you uncomfortable but that challenge you. And also as people who write, I find it really interesting to just see how other people write and structure sentences and tell stories, because sometimes when you're just doing it so much yourself, you forget that it encourages you to play around with sentence structure and all those collections of short stories. Actually, like my favorite, Difficult Women by Roxane Gay, haven't read it, it's beautiful. It's just
she
amazing.
Does a really good, it's Roxane Gay that does that amazing TED talk.
I know, watch it. She's got the book which is like Bad Feminist.
Yeah,
and she's got Hunger, which came out this year, but Difficult Women is just this beautiful collection of stories that I nothing inspires me more than people who have honed their craft and they're excellent, like Adele. Like if I just watch Adele on YouTube, I'm like, whether you love her, like she's fantastic.
Adele the singer.
For me, I'm just like, she's in a league of her own.
Yeah, isn't she? She's so cool.
Yeah, and I just think seeing people who are excellent at what they do, and she's quietly excellent as well, like she doesn't brag. And just like someone like Roxane Gay, who just tells stories in such a unique, beautiful way, I think that inspires me more than anything, just seeing people who have honed their craft to that point.
If you were to kind of, what would be the best compliment anyone could pay you, like if someone was talking about you to their friend and saying, that sounds a bit weird actually, talking about you to their friend, not talking about you, but you know what I mean, right?
Oh my god, that is such a hard question. I guess I would hope people would say that I would hope people would feel like I tell the truth, and I hope, oh god, I don't know, I guess I hope people would just feel like, I don't know. I guess I hope, I always hope people feel like I tell the truth. I guess I always hope that people feel like I hold space for them to listen to themselves. I think that's always my biggest aim with like my business and my work, is like, I hope I can hold space for people to listen to themselves. And like, honestly, my biggest mission in life is I want to help people be the bravest version of themselves. And if I manage to achieve that in the rest of my lifetime with however many people, that will be, I'll be a happy human.
I think you definitely do that. Where can everybody find you online? And also, can you tell us a little bit about your coaching packages if you want to?
Yeah, so you can find me at jencarrington.com. I am I have a weird relationship with social media. Sometimes I show up, sometimes I don't. But I'm also Jen Carrington on those. Yeah, I have a podcast, Make It Happen, which is currently in hiatus. It should be coming back next year, but I say this a lot and then I get tired and don't do it, but it should be coming back.
There's a back catalogue that you can listen
yeah,
to.
Yeah, there's lots of episodes. And then, yeah, so I work one-on-one with wonderful, creative humans. I have two different packages. I've got a six-month package. I have a one-off session package. Basically, I just walk with people in their journeys. I hold space for them. I action plan with them. I'm like a accountability partner, creative mentor, strategic partner in crime, all rolled up into one. But if you want to find out more about it, the best place is on my website. I have like a page full of client stories, which are always fun to read. But yeah, that's where you can find me. And I have my favorite thing to create every week is I send out emails every Sunday to my email community. So if you want to dive into more of that, that's probably the best place to dive into.
Yes, and I will link to all of it in the show notes.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. It was great to speak to you.
Thanks for listening to What She Said. If you liked this episode or any of the other episodes, then please think about leaving me a rating and a review on iTunes, because it really helps get the show out to other awesome creators like you, and it's a little bit of an ego boost for me too. If you want to connect with me, you can find me over on Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, Facebook, everywhere, at Wanderlooze Blog, or just head over to my blog, wanderlooze.com, which is also where you can find the show notes to every single episode too. I love hearing what you think about the show, if it's good, and I try to reply to each and every one of you. Thanks for listening, and come back again next week.